Hi, everyone. Welcome to Waste 360's Nothing Wasted podcast. On every episode, we invite the most interesting people in waste, recycling, and organics to sit down with us and chat candidly about their thoughts, their work, this unique industry, and so much more. So thanks for listening and enjoy this episode.
My name is Craig Wittig, and I work for the Recycling Partnership, predominantly in multifamily recycling. So really happy to be here this morning and to deal with this topic. We've had the opportunity to interact with a couple folks on the panel historically, and really interested to hear what everyone has to say about the topic. And what I would like to do is we have a panel here today, and starting with Amy, I'd like for each of them to just introduce themselves, where they work at, and a little bit about their background before we get into the session.
Hello.
I'm Amy Tomides with the City of San Marcos in Texas. I'm between Austin and San Antonio, for those who don't know where San Marcos, Texas is. I'm the official title of Community Enhancement Initiatives Manager for the city, but what I do is I manage the resource recovery positions, which is in programs and contracts, trash recycling, composting, keep San Marcos beautiful, and the community enhancement fee that we now charge our residents.
Good morning. I'm David Tonjes. I'm from Stony Brook University. There I'm in the Department of Technology and Society, and I'm director of the Waste Data and Analysis Center. I have a slide. I'll tell you a little bit more about things like that. I've been working in the waste industry for about 30 years, mostly in planning and impacts.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm Ruth Abbey with Abbey & Associates, doing business as Zero Waste Associates. We're a mission-driven consulting firm based primarily in the San Francisco Bay Area. And we work with communities across the country, institutions and businesses on the physical and social infrastructure for zero waste.
Good morning, everyone. Evan Novell, City of Orlando. I'm a project manager, sustainability project manager. I work on a number of projects with the city, but primarily regarding commercial multifamily recycling. The city implemented an ordinance, and over the past 3 years, and continuing for another year, we're rolling out that ordinance, implementing it, and guiding properties as they come on board with compliance.
Wonderful, thank you very much. And so as the Recycling Partnership looks at the landscape of multifamily recycling, we think there's about 13 million of the roughly 22 million, again, depending on how we define multifamily units, but we think there's no access in roughly two-thirds of those units. And so just to provide access is kind of the first step. And so as we look today, we kind of are looking at that process in regards to most of the discussion today is going to revolve around places that either have mandatory multifamily recycling or an ordinance driving that in that city. And so like that's a great step that folks could take to kind of alleviate bringing some of those 13 million units into the recycling system. And so we're going to start off with David and talk through it. In the end, we're going to have plenty of time for folks to answer questions as well.
Good morning. I'm going to tell you today about an experiment we conducted in Queens, New York, which was to encourage additional recycling in apartment buildings through some social norm interventions. This research was funded by the Environmental Research and Educational Foundation. Elizabeth Hewitt was the principal investigator on it. Alexandra Eck did most of the work. Yi Wang has been analyzing the data, and I had something to do with the sorting work that we conducted. So the Department of Technology and Society, which I'm part of, is in the College of Engineering and Applied Sciences at Stony Brook. Stony Brook is part of the State University of New York, which you may not realize is the largest university in the world, 64 campuses, 1.3 million students. My department offers a BS, an MS, which we are now moving entirely online, so anyone around the country who wants to get an MS from us is welcome. And we also have a PhD in technology, policy, and innovation. My research center is the Waste Data and Analysis Center. We have 12 full-time and 6 part-time researchers. We have about $1 million a year in funding, including this project. So the study overview was we enlisted a progressive apartment, large apartment. So they're a large company that owns lots of apartment buildings. And we had two essentially matching multifamily high-rise buildings in Long Island City, Queens. They're very upscale, so that everyone that we surveyed had completed at least a bachelor's degree. The apartments are very expensive, and the members of these buildings, according to our survey, were very progressive in their political views. So it's not exactly a standard apartment group for the nation as a whole. Nonetheless, we were trying to determine if we could change their recycling behavior to improve their recycling rates by doing a couple of interventions. So to measure what we were doing, we conducted a baseline survey and a follow-up survey when the intervention was complete. We counted how much recyclables were put out each week over about a year, and we did four sorts of the garbage and recyclables in the buildings, both before, during, and after, and 6 months after the intervention. And the intervention itself was 12 weeks of posters. So there were two types. One was typical educational efforts, you know, talking about the benefits of recycling and why people should recycle. The second intervention for the other building, though, was competition. And so what we would do is we would post each week measurements saying how they had done either worse or better than the other building, and to try to see if that would make them recycle more. So in the energy sector, this notion of competition has been found to be very effective at changing people's behavior. So our results. As I said, this is a very progressive, upscale community, and so you can imagine that their political beliefs help feed their behaviors. And so 84% that reported that they recycled, 89% said that residential waste is a major environmental problem, and 73% said that people who were important to them thought that they should be recycling. And so this is a motivated, involved community. On the other hand, only a third of the people in our survey noticed our posters, but of those who noticed the posters, nearly half said that they motivated them to recycle more, which if you do the multiplication means we affected about 15% of the people in the building. Not a great output. The field data, when we sorted the garbage, we didn't see any strong patterns between the two buildings. So the north building was the one that received education. The south building was the competition building. And in terms of the quality of both their MSW and the quality of their recyclables, there wasn't really a difference between the start of the experiment and the end of the experiment. On the other hand, the second graph here shows that the north building had relatively consistent amounts of recyclables that they set out each week. The south building, on the other hand, during the intervention saw increases in the amount of recyclables that were set out once we stopped posting the posters, even though no one seemed to notice them. The amount of recycling fell off. And so that's what I have to tell you right now, and I'll pass it on over.
So again, Evan Novell with City of Orlando. I'm going to be speaking on some of our ordinance specifics. I won't dive into too much of our research efforts. If you're interested in some of that from an Orlando perspective, I'll be presenting on some of those Thursday morning at the Crunching the Numbers workshop. I just want to say I've been enjoying the trend of people using an intro slide that shows their family. I think I might start doing that. But I'm not a father yet, but with that being said, I do like to say I have three children, one cat, one dog, and one multifamily mandatory recycling ordinance. I'll let you decide which one is the problem child. It's not the cat. I'll get right into it. Orlando does have a multifamily recycling ordinance. We're reaching a mature stage for that ordinance. It's phased in over 4 years, and we're currently 3 years into it. It's been incredibly successful. With that being said, of course, we have challenges, but we tackle them as they come. I want to provide a little bit of context for Orlando to start. We have a mid-rise, high-rise, and the majority of these properties are garden style. So kind of typical, Orlando is a product of urban sprawl. So that just kind of accounts for why most of our multifamily properties are the garden style variety. Approximately 35% of our properties are considered LMI, low to moderate income. We have apartments, condos, assisted and senior living, affordable housing, age-restricted communities, and then our apartments range from A to D for the quality. We have a total of over 50,000 units across 500 properties, and the multifamily sector is expanding. That's probably the same for everywhere. It's very difficult to find an apartment now in Orlando, and I'd imagine many other places across the country. They can't keep up, but it is expanding. We utilize every type of truck to service our multifamily customers, so front end load, rear load, side load, compactors, everything. Most apartments with recycling have between 0.02 and 0.05 cubic yards per unit of recycling capacity. It's kind of abysmal, but that's kind of the same across the spectrum. Single family homes typically have, at least in Orlando, half a yard. So this is a number, one of the metrics that we use to gauge the success, the availability that we have in Orlando. All right, so I just want to look at some of the history for our policy development and recycling. We've had residential recycling for over a decade now, I think actually close to two decades. But beginning around 2012, we started to receive an overwhelming amount of feedback and requests from our residents and businesses requesting recycling. People either didn't have it at home or they didn't have it at work. People were bringing recycling from home to work to recycle, or maybe from work back home to recycle. So this is what prompted us to look into providing some form of recycling for those people that did not have it. In 2012, we had our first iteration of what would become this ordinance. We established six public drop-off locations, and those are still here to this day. So a decade now, those have been around. We plan to leave them there. Not all of our properties are in compliance yet, so by leaving this there, that we're covering that base, for those properties that don't yet have recycling. Around 2016, policy planning begins. 2016, 2017, which is where my tenure with the city starts. Solid waste staff host or attend over two dozen stakeholder engagement meetings. This is over the course of a year, maybe 18 months. So a significant stakeholder engagement process, educational campaigns. This is where I came on board, so I was privileged enough to host some of these. We had webinars, we had workshops. We invited all kinds of stakeholders, haulers, city council, mayor, commissioners, residents, business owners, everyone that you could think of came to these meetings. 2018, we had our first and second ordinance hearings, and both were approved by city council. And we had no naysayers, no objections, passed with flying colors. And we credit that to us doing that significant stakeholder engagement process very early on. And then 2019, ordinance implementation. So the ordinance came into effect 2019. It's phased in over 4 years, and I'll have a slide covering phasing coming up here shortly. I do want to go over our operational scope, because I know this is not applicable to everyone in the room. Is there anyone from public sector in here or from municipality? All right, so this applies to a bunch of you then. But not everything that works at Orlando might work in your municipality, so I just want to set the stage and provide some context of what our operational scope is. We're strictly a hauler. We don't run or operate a MRF. We just carry the material. We house a CNG fleet of about 26 commercial vehicles. The city has exclusivity over commercial front-end loaded garbage service. Not the case for recycling. That's important, which I'll get to a little bit later on. We also operate a commercial roll-off franchise and several compactors throughout the city. We service more than 60,000 residential homes and approximately 11,000 units. There are over 50,000 multifamily units in the city. We don't service all of those. We share that space with other private haulers in Orange County. Recycling is voluntary across all sectors. I also get a lot of questions on this because, you know, I mentioned mandatory recycling ordinance and now voluntary across all sectors. It's mandatory from a property standpoint, right? So the property manager or property owner has to provide the opportunity to recycle, but we don't enforce that at a residential level, right? Each resident is, it would be impossible almost. There's no point source for contamination or materials being put in either the garbage or recycling dumpsters at a multifamily property. We can't track that. So that's why we don't enforce it. It's voluntary at a residential level. We have approximately 80 drivers and refuse collectors and a very active research and administrative staff. All right, so just to go over some of the ordinance specifics, Mike Carroll, who just retired, our former division manager, always meant for this to be an opportunity to recycle. So it is enforceable, but while we do want quality and quantity, at the end of the day, we're not going to sacrifice one for the other. So that's why it's just meant to provide the opportunity. And with that, we've seen overwhelming success and adoption of the policy. So multifamily, the city defines that as anything four or more units. It's phased in over 4 years. And a multi-use property can determine how it comes into compliance. So for example, if you have a high rise with maybe some retail space on the bottom, and if that retail space falls into our second phase while the multifamily portion falls into phase three, that property can decide at what point it wants to come into compliance. And having it phased in over 4 years allowed us to do two things. One of which is to front load the impact of the ordinance, right? Our first phase includes our largest properties, the biggest impact to the recycling stream, but it's also the fewest number of properties overall in the city. So we make the biggest impact without adding an overwhelming number of stops to any of our routes. And then second, we're able to take on this ordinance without it being burdensome in terms of new customers. So compliance requires three things, a container, dumpster, cart. It doesn't matter, it all depends on which hauler you go with. So a container, ongoing service for that container, and then finally the submission of a recycling verification form, which is mostly point of contact information, but also includes a section for a narrative on how recycling works at the property, what hauler you use, how much yardage per week. These are all metrics that we like to keep track of so we can measure success of the ordinance. The responsibility falls to the property manager or property owner. Properties can choose from a list of approved haulers. Orange County comes out with a list every couple of years, and I think the most recent version is about 20 different haulers, somewhere just under two dozen. So we don't have exclusivity over that, and that's been a boon for us because we don't have to shoulder the burden of all those new recycling customers. And we all operate and compete in that same space, that multifamily space. I always get questions about enforcement. There is enforcement. To date, we haven't had to enforce the ordinance at all. We've had a couple people hesitant, but once we, you know, show them that it's a fairly easy process, they can potentially save money. We've never had to enforce it. We can pull a certificate of occupancy that's written into the ordinance if a property just outright refused to recycle, but we've never had to come close to that. Exemptions and waivers are an option. This mainly applies to the commercial side of the ordinance. We have some properties that just don't generate recyclable material, a smoothie shop, for example. They can apply for a waiver since they generate little to no, we define as a negligible amount of recycling. The recycling verification form is tied to our permitting process. So if any property or if any contractor applies for a permit, a developer, they actually are required to have a recycling plan now through our city, which is something that might be utilized elsewhere, but from what I've seen in my own research, somewhat unique to actually be tied into the permitting process for recycling. Solid waste usually is, you know, the need to have a space for a compactor or for a truck to maneuver through the property. But having recycling tied in is somewhat of a newer thing, I believe. And then recycling verification forms are resubmitted, updated and resubmitted annually. Again, there's a significant turnover at multifamily properties, not just with residents, but with management as well. So we like to keep the latest information on who we're going to need to get in contact with if we discover recycling is no longer on the property. So our phasing timeline, again, it's four phases. Our first phase is new construction or developments making substantial improvements. This is sort of an ongoing phase because it does include new properties, so it doesn't end. But it was a 6-month period for some of those properties or those developments that had already gotten permits to be grandfathered into the ordinance. April 1st of 2020 is when our second phase ended. These were our largest properties. From a multifamily perspective, it's anything 250 or more units. And again, this was our smallest overall number of properties, but overall largest amount of units per phase. April 1st of last year concluded our phase three. These were our medium-sized properties, multifamily developments with 75 to 249 units. Again, less units, but more overall properties. And then our phase four, which concludes a little less than a year from now, will be all other properties. So anything under 75, between 4 and 74 units. All right, so I want to go over some of the what I've seen are common challenges that come up. Is anyone in the work with multifamily properties and recycling here? Some of these are going to be very familiar. And some of the responses to some of these obstacles and challenges may be shared as well, but this is kind of what Orlando did to tackle some of those common misconceptions or obstacles that come from multifamily properties. So one of them is, you know, talking to property managers, corporate approval can be a lengthy process. So again, sticking with the same theme here, mailers were sent and site visits conducted up to a year out from compliance date. So when I started with the city, phasing had just started. But before that, we had sent out mailers, you know, done those webinars, those workshops, and eventually site visits. The past 2 years have been somewhat difficult for site visits because of COVID. People were working remotely and not in the office. So we supplemented that with phone calls and emails. Homeowner associations or other neighborhood entities have their own zoning stipulations and restrictions. So for this, as an example, we can issue temporary one-year exemptions, giving properties time to adjust financially, spatially, whatever the case may be. An example is we have a neighborhood, or rather a collection of neighborhoods that, while the city doesn't require an enclosure for existing properties, their master association does. So we have, you know, a dozen or so properties scrambling to build enclosures, and you know, it's meant to provide the opportunity, and we understood this frustration, whatever the miscommunication was, and issued them one-year exemptions, which need to be reapplied for, but ideally they're all on track over the course of this next year to come into compliance. There's no space on the property for an extra dumpster. This is one of the more common ones that I get when I'm out in the field. So moving forward, and this again is tied into that permitting process, new developments will be required to have double enclosures. So again, any new development or property undergoing significant renovations has to include plans for a double enclosure for garbage and recycling. Properties often set their budget up to 1 year in advance. This is another one I get from property managers while I'm out there. They don't have space in the budget for adding a recycling service. At Orlando, our recycling prices can often save customers money. It's usually the case if they have dumpster-based garbage service. Our prices have changed recently, but effectively our cost for recycling is half the cost of garbage yard for yard. We're an enterprise fund, so we can supplement, you know, anything we lose by doing that, which might not be the case for everyone. But as an example, and Craig loves this graphic, I don't have it up here, but we have a side-by-side visual of an 8-yard garbage dumpster and what that property will pay for that collected twice a week, and then different options for adding recycling. So for example, if you drop that 8-yard down to once a week pickup and add an 8-yard recycling dumpster, since it's half the cost, you're saving 25%. So this is a great graphic. Whenever I present it, you know, people ask me, what's the catch? And I say, I work for the city. There is no catch. This is how it is. COVID created a shift in residential and commercial recycling streams. This, you know, was a frustrating thing for a lot of us in the industry, but it also gave us the opportunity to renew and rebrand a lot of our educational efforts, many of it with the help of the Recycling Partnership. So we went from a very text-based educational system to a more of a picturesque, graphic-based educational system. Ongoing steel shortage and price increases. Anyone been affected by like raising dumpster prices or anything like that? Yeah. We supplemented our assets with plastic dumpsters. So 2 yards all the way up to 4 yard plastic dumpsters. Just another challenge we've witnessed over the past couple of years, as well as an ongoing shortage of CDL holders. I don't know. This is a problem across the country as well, but. And I've heard this company brought up a couple times, thrown under the bus, so I'm going to do it as well, but in a different context. Amazon opened a warehouse in our backyard, so we've steadily seen some of our drivers being poached from other companies, other haulers. Oh, and for that solution, our Public Works Division held our first ever mass hiring event. So maybe a little bit behind the curve on that one, but. Great success, something we're going to start doing biannually, and hopefully get back on track with our CDL drivers. All right, so I'll just go over some of the ordinance results so far. Since the implementation, Orlando has increased max recycling capacity over 9,000 cubic yards at just our multifamily properties and about 1,200 tons annually. This is only representative of the city's recycling operation, so keep in mind, 11,000 units, there are still 49 or more thousand units out there that are being serviced by other haulers. This has the potential to divert another 12% of our solid waste from the landfill based on our 2021 numbers. Recycling is available to approximately 29,000 units out of those 50 to 60,000. Again, we have some properties that just have not come into compliance yet, as well as some properties that have temporary exemptions. 4,500 properties have received in-unit totes. 11,000 units have received informational half pagers. We provide these in bilingual, Spanish and English, occasionally, and more so in the next year, different languages. We have a significant Haitian population. So we'll be adding languages to our recyclable material, educational material. 3,000 units have received property-specific recycling instructions. So some of our properties that really struggle, we're able to basically print out with text and words in multiple languages how to recycle at that property. So it might say, welcome to the Madison, this is how you recycle. Your recycling container is located between buildings 11 and 12. Please dispose of these items loosely, and so on. So how was this ordinance implementation possible in Orlando? We have a dedicated project management staff. It's myself and two other project managers, and we have between two and four associates or coordinators. Again, this is something that's highly variable from one municipality to the next, especially when you're from a smaller municipality. There may just not be the funding to staff a crew like this. We're able to tailor recycling programs that can overcome challenges unique to the property. So a big part of what I do is consultations at no charge to whoever's requesting them, where we go out to the property, we assess, come up with a diagnosis, whatever the problems may be, and then tailor a program that's gonna work at that property, right? Maybe they don't have space for a dumpster, so we can utilize carts. Maybe we can put a dumpster on wheels. All those questions that might come up, believe it or not, like, we're all very familiar with recycling, but property management, it can be overwhelming, an overwhelming process for them. So having some boots on the ground to walk them through that process has been a great help to soothing any issues or concerns that come up on their part, and allowing those strategies to be implemented successfully. Ongoing grants help facilitate and incentivize compliance. A lot of thanks to the Recycling Partnership. They've helped us out for 1 year and going into a second year. So many thanks to them. Our recycling prices are yard for yard half the cost of garbage. Again, when it comes to money issues, which is almost always the forefront issue, once we can show that they could potentially save money or at least not have a significant increase in overall cost, they're much more interested into coming into compliance. This was all a result of overwhelming feedback and requests for recycling availability. So it was the right time to do this. We had the support from all parties involved, and we pulled the trigger and moved forward with implementing this. The city and mayor have an overarching goal of zero waste to the landfill by 2040. We supplement a lot of our recycling efforts with additional efforts, including waste diversion, backyard composting and commercial food waste programs. A couple of my colleagues are speaking on that now, and I think are also speaking on it tomorrow if anyone's interested in that. There are limitations on solid waste dumpster placement, but not for recycling for the city. So you cannot place a garbage dumpster in a parking spot or a public right-of-way, but you can for a recycling dumpster, and we take advantage of that all the time. So containers can be placed in parking spaces, on the grass, public right-of-way, wherever is gonna work best for the property. We're gonna have time for questions and answers, and then if we don't get to anything that you may have for me today, I'm here all week. So just find me and we can talk. Thank you.
And as we transition from Evan's proposal, Evan's discussion to Amy's, so Orlando runs a program where they're the physical collector of the material, and Amy's gonna talk about a system where they basically contract for that service. So definite contrast as you're looking to how to get into that. It's something you need to consider.
Good morning. Amy Tomides again, City of San Marcos. As Craig was saying, yes, City of San Marcos, we contract our hauling to a provider for residential, which has curbside trash, recycled compost. And then in 2010, we did a pilot program. And in 2011, it went into effect an ordinance that we would contract out for multifamily recycling. And this came about because a member of our council lived in an apartment complex and was wondering why he couldn't have single stream recycling there when we started having it in our residential in 2009. And we'd had recycling, residential curbside recycling since 2003, or maybe a little before that. And I started with the city in 2013, so this started before me. We have Texas State University, which is the fifth largest university in Texas. We are a small college town. They are a majority of the multifamily population is the college students. And we're also a low-income community. We have a lot of socioeconomic and Hispanic community in our town. So we have, it's about a little bit more than 64,000 residents at this point. But again, Texas State is about 40,000 enrollment now, and they can get up to 50,000. So it'll be interesting to see where Texas State and San Marcos goes. So we had already had multifamily recycling for a few years, and I had done different competitions when I started trying to conquer the beast that is multifamily recycling. And when I heard Cody speak from the Recycling Partnership at a State of Texas Alliance for Recycling Summit in 2018, and he said the Recycling Partnership was gonna start looking at multifamily recycling, I looked at my team and we just said, hell yeah. And we attacked him the second he got off the stage and explained that we've had multifamily recycling since 2010, 11-ish, and we are having this problem. We've had competitions between apartment complexes and we're not getting them to do it. We've done different kinds of ways to engage with them. We would love to have be a part of anything you're gonna do to find out about how to engage more residents in multifamily to recycle. So what we did is, I think about less than a year later, I got a phone call from Craig and my partner and I in the multifamily part were very excited. And we said, listen, we've already been doing a lot of things, but we need to figure out how to do it better. So we did a research project on different ways to engage residents in multifamily apartments. So some of them had education only. They helped us revamp our educational outreach with this lovely magnet. And they paid for that along with interns. So Texas State University has amazing students in the geography department who love to research on things. And we had six of them. And we walked door to door those magnets to every single multifamily unit. But some of them also got a bin, because when we spoke with Heather and I, when we would speak with apartment managers, they were like, these residents, they know to go get a trash container at the store when they're moving in, but they don't know to get a recycling container. Can you provide them with a recycling container? And we're like, yeah, no, we don't have that kind of money. So when we talked with Craig, it's like, hey, how about if we provide a container? Because we've heard this feedback from multifamily apartment management. And then the other part was to do the bin and a valet service. A lot of our apartments were starting to get valet trash, but not valet recycling. And in all of this conversation as well, when our ordinance went into effect, in developments, any multifamily or commercial has to provide, and we don't mandate recycling for commercial properties, understand this. They have to provide equal space in a dumpster enclosure for trash and recycling, preparing for if our council ever approves doing a universal recycling ordinance or just mandating that they recycle. So they're already having to have to provide that space. In the new developments, it was grandfathered for people who had already had a property. But then in the apartment complexes, we were noticing that they were all in a far corner. We now in our ordinance say they have to be within 500 feet of a unit. So there will be an enclosure for trash and recycle within 500 feet of any unit in a multifamily complex to encourage people to recycle. So we did this breakout, and we did, I thought our timeline was on that. We did with our interns, we did 3 weeks of auditing a sample of an education only, education and bin, and education bin and valet complexes. Then we passed out all the information, and then we audited again. Now this happened January of 2020, so once COVID hit, our interns started to feel a little worried about doing anything, and our whole research project was cut short. But this was our methodology. It was volume-based and not weight-based. And I've actually had a lot of conversations with some people about this recently. I actually don't like basing anything on weight, because I could have a truck full of recycling and it's plastic and aluminum, which is weighing less now, and it could be 3 bowling balls in there and it could screw up everything. So this was volume-based because we were just looking in. We were saying, how full is that cart with everything in it, pulling out all the contaminants, and then how full is it afterwards? And this is how we started doing all this. On the valet bins, we actually did the same thing because it was a door-to-door service. Those bins were set out. We did the whole thing of how full were they, pulled out contaminants, and then how full was it? And we left these oops tags for every valet. So people were getting an individual response on how they were working in multifamily. We had already been starting this with residential, which we expanded in 2020 in the summer, but we saw a great response. So having a multifamily resident know exactly what they're doing wrong instead of just taking it to the bin and seeing it then was very helpful for those residents. And then we also put these stickers on the inside of the bin and on the outside, just to remind them to not bag anything. So this is what we came up with. This is what happened. The education only actually did nothing at all for increasing recycling. The education in bin, because people had that container, it increased 30%. And then the valet, it was an increase of 60%. Now there, we also audited when we did the valet, the carts, because we're trying to get rid of dumpsters at multifamily for recycling. When we were doing our other competitions, we were noticing things like large appliances being thrown in there and other stuff from maintenance. So we switched everybody over to a 96-gallon cart for recycling, increasing the number of recycling carts at the valet properties because they had increased so much. But this also minimized the amount and the type of contamination we were getting, so it was really helpful. Anyway, so what we found out is doing the valet was a 60% increase. We really lowered the contamination, and what we're hoping to find and do with our council, I guess that we question later, but it presented all these findings to council, our city council recently, and we're going to be able to go ahead and look to go for an RFP for a valet provider that we will be able to manage. We actually have an apartment complex that has valet recycling. We had an intern audit them for about 2 months this past spring, and they weren't putting any of the recycling in the recycling carts we had on site. So we had no idea what they were doing with the recycling. So this company was charging the apartment complex for recycling, but we don't know what was happening with it. So we're working with, we're hoping to be working with the recycling partnership, we talked about it, to look at how do you write an RFP for a citywide valet provider, because there's so much to think about when you're looking at that. Yeah, so the education only, the contamination went up. Again, we have a very transient population, and it's amazing how kids, when they're at home with their parents, recycle well, but when they move off away from them, they don't. So in here, we had an increase in the contamination for the education only, but on the other ones, so when you're looking at the shared containers and in-unit bins, the shared containers are where we have any, the carts, 96-gallon carts, where people, anybody can go and put in. On the valet, the in-unit bins, those were, that was the contamination. It had actually gone down in the in-unit bins in the valet. But we did find some valets where they kept those oops tags on and never removed their contamination, and we didn't trash it. We left it there for them to see their problems.
Hey, well, good morning, everyone. That was really great to hear about those really great practical examples of folks really picking up and putting down recyclables. I'm going to kind of wrap things up with some observations and conclusions and recommendations that we can all kind of do better in the world of multifamily recycling. And just first off, I wanted to explain kind of the context for multifamily recycling, which is pretty obvious, but just to remind you of your high school U.S. history class, the tragedy of the commons, which is, you know, back in the 17th century, folks would have town greens, and you could, you know, put your sheep out there and let them kind of, you know, eat the grass, and that was fine if it was a relatively few number of sheep. But because it was nobody's town green, it was a commons, everybody could put their sheep out in the commons, you know, pretty soon those town greens got, you know, decimated and, you know, no longer good for having your sheep graze. So that's the tragedy of the commons. If no one is responsible, or if it's kind of everybody is responsible, it's hard to get the right thing done. So this is the example of the tragedy of the commons in recycling, right? These are nobody's bins. Nobody owns these bins. It's the complex's bins. And so, whereas in the single family context, you know, we all have our cart, our recycling cart. It's my cart. I might even put my address on it so you don't confuse it with my neighbor's cart when it gets serviced. And folks are just really just much more protective and, you know, and can do a better job. Hey, it's my cart. Pride of ownership, right? So one of the issues that we really have in multifamily recycling, it's nobody's bin, right? So that's kind of the problem. I did want to share a slide. This is my solution for that. This actually comes from my colleagues, Cascadia Consulting Group up in Seattle, Washington. And I love this because it kind of it's really significant in terms of recycling infrastructure. I talked earlier about, you know, there's social infrastructure and physical infrastructure. This is the physical infrastructure of multifamily recycling that comes along with the four C's of infrastructure. Convenience. You have to make it convenient, as convenient to recycle as it is for trash. So if you have a trash, you know, bin at every complex, but you got to walk two complexes down to recycle, that's not too convenient. Clarity, that means clarity of what you're really trying to do. What are you trying to recycle? You know, one of my takeaways from San Marcos is like, oh man, you know, people were trying to recycle more, maybe, because of the education. And when we recycle more, sometimes we mess up, right? Because I was looking at the bins from WasteQuip, because I brought back from my hotel my plastic bottle, which I got free at the hotel, and my paper cup, which I got from Starbucks, because they can't refill your coffee cups here in Nevada. Something we got to work on. Anyway, I read the sign, and the coffee cup, which is recyclable in some cities, it's compostable in some cities, here at the convention center, it has to go in the trash. But you got to really read that sign. Plus, I was really motivated to know how to get my coffee cup recycled. Can't recycle it here. So, you know, that's not necessarily really obvious. People are transient, meaning they move from city to city. So you got to be way explicit with them about what you really want them to recycle in your community. It's not something that we all know. And I think as municipal staff, we kind of get tired of saying the same thing all over again in the same way. You know, it's that that whole idea of, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing all over and again, accepting different results. However, in the context of recycling, you know, explaining what's recyclable, explaining it again, giving examples, showing pictures, I'm not sure you can really do too much. Sometimes we also kind of get a little clever and use puns and, you know, things that maybe make sense to us and are funny to us, but really people just want to know how to recycle. We've done hundreds and hundreds of workshops across the country working on folks when they're doing solid waste plans or zero waste plans, and they always say, just tell my neighbor what to put in his blue bin, you know. They just need to know. That's the clarity. Color is the third C of infrastructure, which is really color coding. Okay, so this is a best practice in multifamily recycling, or really any recycling. So one of the things that we really like is, should, what color should the recycling bin be? Shout it out. It should be blue, man. So why is it that when you go to some cities, right, the recycling bin is gray, or the recycling bin is orange, or the recycling bin is yellow? I mean, it's just making it hard for people, right? So let's think about maybe getting a little standardization. Kind of makes sense for it to be blue. But whatever it is in your community, if you're stuck with yellow, fine. But you just got to be way consistent everywhere you go. Yellow, 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 yellow. So inside the house, outside the house, inside your apartment building, in, you know, if you have a little blue bin for recycling in your home, and then you take it out to a yellow bin, give people a chance, right? So color coding, make sure you have the right colors for the right materials, whatever they are. And then capacity. Evan talked about, you know, we really need to provide enough capacity for folks, because once their recycling gets filled, where are folks going to put the recyclables? In the trash. Right, okay, so you have to have convenience, clarity, color, and capacity. And here's another picture, again, from my colleagues at Cascadia, which I absolutely love. Color, they get an A-plus for color in this recycling enclosure, because they have gray for trash, gray, 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 wherever they go, gray, 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 gray. And then they have blue for recycling, blue, 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 wherever they go in that community, it's blue, blue, blue. And it's consistent. It's consistent on the bin, it's consistent on the labels, and, you know, that's, you know, so they get an A-plus for color. They get a B-plus for clarity. The signs are okay, but they're a little hard to read, and maybe it's not that interesting, you know, the specific... pictures of the recyclables might be a little bit difficult to follow, particularly if not paying too close attention. So you could have bigger, broader, this is it. Do, you know, this is what we want, this is what we don't want. And the same thing for landfill, you know, really being really explicit. WasteQuip did this. There is a picture of the coffee cup in the landfill. So don't anybody try to put their coffee cup in the recycling or the compost. It goes in the landfill here at the convention center. So being really explicit about what goes in the recycling, what goes in the landfill. And then convenience, co-location. These are pretty close to each other. They get a B+. It would be great if they were right next to each other. But, you know, as our colleagues explained, that's not always easy to do. Enclosures are kind of difficult. But anyway, they get a B+ for that. And then capacity. Having enough capacity for recycling, really important. We're recommending here 0.1 cubic yards per week per unit as a benchmark. So, you know, that's a little bit better than the 0.02. So, you know, that might be something that you really need to either mandate. You know, we see that in some communities. We actually mandate for property owners that they provide sufficient capacity for recycling for their tenants. Garbage chutes are a terrible problem. Anybody have garbage chutes at their complexes? Garbage chutes are terrible. Garbage chutes are terrible. Why? Because they're really convenient to get rid of garbage and really, really hard to do anything else. You know, we've experimented with dialing the garbage chute. You know, okay, now it's going to go in the recycling dumpster. Okay, now it's going to go in the trash dumpster, organics dumpster. Really difficult to do it the right way. So garbage chutes are really terrible, and a lot of communities that we're working with are just getting rid of garbage chutes. Got to get rid of garbage chutes. They don't work. They don't work in our new system of two-stream or three-stream recycling. So instead, you know, we are closing garbage chutes and supplementing that with collection on each floor. And I've seen this really beautifully done, right? So the garbage chute area is oftentimes big enough for one or two carts. That does require somebody to move those carts down to the loading dock for collection. It is a little bit of a hassle, but these people are more, at least they're gonna give a chance, an opportunity. As in Orlando, you have the opportunity to at least recycle if you have that recycling available. So now I'm going to talk about a few other best practices for increasing recycling. One absolutely is proactive right-sizing, really providing the amount of capacity needed both on the recycling and on the trash, and really working with the property manager to say, hey, look, you don't need the same size container anymore, right? You don't need the same, you don't need 2 8-yarders necessarily if you only have once a week collection. You only need, you know, one of each, right? So, you know, half of that, a 4-yarder and a 4-yarder, whatever. You know, you just, you don't need that much, you don't need that much space. You can also transition to carts, as we're hearing about in San Marcos. Great idea. Carts are really easy to service, and you can put carts in different places where you can, in enclosures where you can't have a dumpster. You know, the front end loader actually has to stab that bin and lift it over, whatever. There's more flexibility with carts, so that's maybe an opportunity to actually do proactive right sizing, working with every property manager to design the space to achieve recycling. And then installing signage. Here are some folks from Waste Management beautifully installing signs. I found this picture online. I thought it was beautiful. So actually going, not expecting the property manager to do anything. You know, so it's a lot to ask, right? You can deliver them a packet, say, hey, deliver these brochures to all of your households. Really hard thing to ask. Better if you just go do it, right? You go install the signs both on the bin and above the bins. You go door to door to every single household. You give them the bins. You give them, they give them the information. Give folks a chance to do the right thing. So taking responsibility to not only provide the information but installing it just to make sure it's done right. This is a best practice. And then door to door outreach. We've heard about that. It's a great idea. It really works, you know, to actually go door to door to door. You might ignore a poster in the mail room or a poster in the, you know, recycling room on your hall. But, you know, if someone comes to your building, goes door to door, gives you your equipment, talks to you about recycling, particularly if they are talking to you in a language that is easy for you to hear. If English is not your first language, you know, that complex, maybe we should have folks that speak the language that's a predominant in the building. So this is an example of a door-to-door outreach where two folks went, one English speaker, one Spanish speaker, went door-to-door. I went on that project too. It was awesome. Whenever we were at a door, when someone spoke Spanish and my colleague was there, they felt so relaxed and relieved to be able to speak in Spanish rather than English, which was a little bit harder if you're not a native English speaker. So door-to-door or outreach, using language that people, it's easier for them to do, best practice in multifamily recycling. And then kind of lastly, leverage your partnerships. So leveraging your partnerships means working with the university, you're working with the nonprofits, working with the Chamber of Commerce, working with the realtors in town and the city officials. There's nothing better, you know, and city council folks do this all the time. When they're campaigning, they go door to door. We've gone door to door with our city councilors, and there's nothing better than folks like to see than their city councilor talking to them about recycling. They love that. And the city councilor loves it too, because then they get that feedback. They're already people persons because they ran for office. And then they get really good visceral feedback about the program. And of course, they can talk about other things like potholes or, you know, traffic or whatever. So really great practice, and your elected officials will love it. This is an example from actually the city of Oakland, where the City of Oakland, Waste Management, Northern California Recycling Association, which is a local NGO in the Northern California, and the ILWU, the longshoremen, had a project together where they went door to door to door in Oakland on multifamily recycling and composting. And it was very you know, exciting for folks when they would actually come across, for example, a student in the Oakland schools. They were already recycling in the and composting in the Oakland schools. We get a student there, and they're like, oh, great, yeah, we can compost at home. We can recycle at home. We do this at school. So the last thing that I'll leave you with is making sure that when you are designing programs, if you really want best practices, you want to design your programs to be universal across your community. I know of cities. They have a different program for what do at work, do at home, you know, do it multifamily, do it single family. People move, right? People move from multifamily apartment buildings into single family homes and vice versa. People go to work and go to school. So matching what's recyclable, compostable at home, at work, at school, in single family, in multifamily, you have at least a fair shot of getting folks to do the right thing, at least having that opportunity to recycle as we do in Orlando, and really showing them that number one, you care about who they are and what they're doing, and you want to give them equitable services as you do, as we've all done in single family for decades. So that's what we'll conclude with, and we'll get your questions.
So prior to a couple questions, definitely wanted to say, just like Cody said something at a conference and Amy hunted them down for dollars, the Recycling Partnership is a nationwide nonprofit. We have money. We're interested in multifamily recycling. As we've heard today, the art and science of multifamily recycling is still being developed. So projects like David's involved with, which is effectively behavior change projects to infrastructure projects, we want to be leveraged. We want to be involved. Frankly, we want to do it at a level that's probably 5,000 units or more. If you have 50,000 units that you might impact, we're really interested. But we have dollars and we're interested in working with folks. So afterwards, please feel free to grab a card. But I would invite anyone that has a question, if you could step to that mic, because it's being filmed, we have to ask questions from right there. So any questions?
For all the speakers, is any of you focused on public housing, HUD housing, multifamily units? And how is your outreach education different, and is your operation different?
Basically, the question is, do your efforts encompass public housing? And if so, what did it look like differently than the Class A interactions that you had? Class A is the most expensive housing that David talked about.
We do, like I said, Orlando has 35% low to moderate income housing. Can I talk about this year's company?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we have a second grant with the Recycling Partnership that primarily focuses on these neighborhoods. So any 50% of the 51% or more of the units that we provide service to have to be low to moderate income. So we're really dialing down on some of that public housing, low to moderate income housing, and addressing those issues, those recycling issues specific to those properties, whether it's through building an enclosure, providing totes, bilingual, multilingual material, educational materials, sending people to speak to the neighborhoods, to the residents in those neighborhoods. This year, the rest of this year is really going to be focused on improving recycling at those properties in Orlando.
And then in San Marcos, when it went into effect, the ordinance in 2010 and went citywide in 2011, it encompassed everybody, including those properties. We attend as many events as we can. So we started actually in National Night Out events. We go to all of those, and a lot of those HUD housing or low-income housing units have events then. And so that's when we're getting out there, and all of our outreach is in English and Spanish, so we're able to, because that's our primary two big languages, so that's everything's in that.
And our interactions nationwide have definitely been challenging, specifically in public housing. The amount of money that they're able to allocate towards recycling is effectively none. So, you know, public housing is locked in on their budget, so there's not a whole lot they can do within that space. We've literally offered two very large cities to fund their recycling for a year at all of their public housing units if they could figure out a way to take it from there. And both of them basically said, we appreciate that, but there's no route for me after that year. So it's a significant challenge. We've like kind of looked at maybe a system, and Evan kind of talked about this last night perhaps, where, you know, maybe that there would be some sort of like a someone else would effectively cover it. So you look to your Class A properties in your town to say, hey, how about we bring everyone into the system? But we have definitely not solved that yet, and that budget limitation is a serious challenge. So, but I think multiple touch points is the other thing that we're kind of looking at in Orlando is, we need to stop by more often. There needs to be more interactions, different collateral, or at least see that collateral more times.
Just to add on to that, our fleet and our administrative buildings are in an impoverished area in Orlando, and many of our drivers live in those areas as well. And I have to give them credit because they do an amazing job of informing their neighbors and providing not extra service, but you know that extra nudge or the extra bit of information that their neighbors might need and on how to recycle properly. We even have a program called, I think it's called Ask a Garbage Man, where you know people can submit questions and a garbage man responds to them on our social media or on our website.
The other thing, a great story from Orlando, Mike, who was the former director who just recently retired. This is a single family reference, but he basically said when they started single family recycling, they made the area around their office the biggest route because they didn't think people would participate based on socioeconomic status. And they got their doors blown off, like people really responded. And so I love that story. So we're not necessarily making assumptions about who will and who won't participate. Like we want to make recycling access universal.
You had a slide on common challenges with respect to existing properties that have no space and you know how to retrofit that. Could you speak to how you solved or how you are solving that issue?
So are you talking about, this one go out too?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. Are you talking about properties that are now developing
existing,
a double enclosure?
Existing.
Okay. So we're able to, we try to, whenever possible, we try to utilize dumpsters just because for operational purposes, it's less burdensome for us to use front-end loaded service. If a property has spatial issues, like they just don't have enough space on the property, we're able to use carts or put dumpsters up to 4 cubic yards on wheels and maneuver them in and out of, you know, maybe storage locations. We then place those dumpsters in a place that might not be ideal or aesthetically pleasing, but still able to service that property. I hope that answered your question. If not, I can elaborate.
The other thing we think about is frequency of service. So like, hey, I need a space for a compactor. Well, you don't necessarily need space for a compactor. You could look at a 6-yard service multiple times a week or carts. So it's how often the material's picked up. And the other thing, like Amy talked about, this valet or doorstep collection, that's something that the Recycling Partnership is really interested in. So you could effectively, we see some companies, there's a company called, unfortunately, Trash Cab in Columbus, Ohio, but they're really good at recycling, but they have effectively gotten rid of dumpsters on properties, and they just pick up and take it off-site every time they collect recycling and waste. So they kind of get rid of that illegal dumping piece. And so, not that there's not a cost thought that you need to look at there, but how you pick material up might be an answer as well. Please.
Hi, I was hoping you could speak to this process of engaging really large property managers, developers, I mean this corporate world where they have maybe hundreds of thousands of properties, and like who are you talking to and how long does this process take and what's your carrot for getting them to even talk to you about recycling when they're dealing with you know a million other problems at their properties?
Yeah, the best carrot is definitely the mandatory aspect of it. You know, I don't always open with that. I like to. Are there any property managers in the room? No. Okay. I always like to disarm property managers. You know, when I show up at a property, they do have hesitance or worries or concerns, and some of them are warranted. Especially if they're in a low to moderate income area. You know, maybe they don't have the funding to implement recycling, or as far as they think anyway. We've recently made a better effort at reaching out to higher level, like regional property managers. We tend to, we see that they there's less turnover at that level than there is at the actual property level. Routinely, we come across properties that, you know, hey, we were here 3 months ago. We dropped off a packet of information. We want to check on your status of compliance. Oh, we don't remember anyone. You know, no one came to see us, and it turns out it's just a new property manager. So that's why we're changing our MO a little bit to reach out to like regional managers, who manage you know those larger firms or organizations within the area. Part of the stakeholder engagement and outreach process, we included AAGO, which is Apartment Association of Greater Orlando. So from a very early point, we had some of those business and multifamily organizations on board and aware of that process. That doesn't always translate into everyone being aware of that. But yeah, to answer your question, we're in a process of transitioning to address like higher level property management.
And then in San Marcos, we have what's called ACT Ally, which is Achieving Community Together. And these are the definite student-based housing apartment complexes, and they meet quarterly. So we will go to those meetings and we give updates on the recycling aspect, because we don't contract for their trash. We just handle the recycling. So when we are announcing, like, we're about to do Bobcats Give Back, it's because Texas State Bobcats, we're about to have the big turn in June and July. So we're working on gathering all the material we can to give to nonprofits. So we went there in May and April and announced we'll be doing the whole sign up for people to come and register. So we actually have this quarterly meeting where we can engage, and then every year, at least once a year, we are contacting every single apartment complex to get updated information on who to contact, and then we're sending out emails regularly to all of them.
And we're seeing across the country that large apartment complexes, or their residents, are pushing back on them. And so AMLI, which is a large apartment owner across the whole country, in a recent survey, their residents said recycling was the second, that's the amenity they wanted second, that's the second most desired amenity in there that was available to them. And so that was driving interest in having an AMLI property as their choice. And so that's the language that a property owner wants to talk, is demand. And so we're meeting what the customers want. It's nice that we have this demand from the customer side. And then the Recycling Partnership has a toolkit online. And so properties, kind of like what Evan showed and Amy showed, they can customize their material to have their name on it, their logo, their URL. And so, like, individuals don't need to know who the Recycling Partnership is. They want to know who they're getting information from. And so we try to provide tools that can be distributed across their whole system. Please.
Good morning. I'm just curious, by any chance, are any of your educational efforts geared towards organics recycling? And if so, is the method in which you've used to promote recycling, is it the same for organics versus just regular recycling?
I can talk to that a little bit. We are implementing organics recycling in multifamily buildings in different parts of the country. And maybe this works.
Yeah.
And sorry. And the tools are slightly different because it's newer, right? It's newer. It's harder. It's icky, you know. And so it really does. It's so much more important to do that individual engagement, you know. So whereas you might have a poster, or you might have a brochure for recycling, it's really important to really engage and to provide those extra tools. So we do give a compost bucket to each of our multifamily building residents, kitchen pail, just like we do with single family, and explain to them how it works, and then follow up. But you really need to follow up. It's not good enough to just go once and see everybody and that's it. And so some of the other tools and tricks that we've learned from, this is from the campus environment, is really measuring each building. And then, you know, if appropriate, scoring them, you know, right? Because we were getting back to that competition issue, right? Here's how we're doing. This building has been able to successfully translate into 75% diversion. And really promoting that. So promoting that among property managers, promoting that among residents, and then have the residents, the property owners, and the folks on site who manage the property work together for success. And really not expecting them. I think that one of the things that we do in multifamily is sort of we expect failure. And the property managers expect failure, and not without cause. So we really have to have the expectation that we can do this, and it can be done. So it's hard to do. You have to keep doing it. The other thing that's very successful in multifamily buildings for organics is if you have a service provider that can accept compostable bags. So our colleagues in Zero Waste Europe have the example in the city of Milan. 90% of organics in the city of Milan, which is a dense city, you know, doesn't have any room for recycling or composting. 90% of residents, multifamily business, are able to, they get a 90% diversion rate of organics. Why? One thing that's widely distributed in Milan are compostable bags. You can get them at the grocery store instead of a grocery bag, and you can pay for them, you can collect them, and you use that, you know, compostable bag to bring down to the loading dock or the enclosure area. Also really important to have a co-location. You know, if you're gonna do an organics program, have organics next to every trash can or trash cart. Because if you expect someone to go two complexes over, you know, my daughter was in a complex and she's like, oh, we don't have food scraps here. I'm like, what, are you kidding me? Of course you have food scraps here. You know, it was in a town that had food scraps for multi-units. And it's like, and we had to hunt around all of the enclosures to find the one enclosure that had food scrap. Well, that compartment complex is not setting them up for success. So that co-location, recycling organics trash, and then some of those tricks and tools such as the compostable bags. We've even seen property managers install compostable bag dispensers on the floors where the trash carts are collected, you know, like if it's a floor-based system, and then, you know, that's an investment that they have to make. That can be expensive, but it is something that actually works, because multifamily, same as single family, we have the ick factor with organics, and that's just something that we have to get over, so.
Yeah. Please.
Yeah, hi. Question maybe best for Evan, given that you operate a fleet. Have you seen opportunities in sensors in one of two ways, either enforcement mechanism of making sure people are recycling or, you know, whatever the mandate side of it, and then on the fleet side, anything proving as an opportunity for optimizing, like your own routes, getting drivers for rules?
Absolutely. We've piloted several dumpster sensor programs. We have another one coming this year. But for both sides, mostly for efficiency purposes, just bring that technology to bring efficiency to our routes, ensuring that we're picking up every stop, and then being able to take photographs at each stop or report incidents as they come up. We definitely utilize that technology on a daily basis. Yep.
But no avenue of it being used for enforcement yet, or maybe for anybody else in the manual.
No.
Does
it what, sorry?
Does it just not make financial sense yet, given that a lot of those are expensive to deploy?
No, we haven't really used it for enforcement yet, and that's mainly because at the end of the day, even if we, you know, we take a snapshot of that dumpster, there's no real way for us to move forward with that other than finding the property. We can't pinpoint that source of contamination, so we haven't really used it in a multifamily setting for enforcement yet. I would like to, but that's just me. I don't know that that's going to be a reality in the near future for us.
There's a company called RealPage, and they are the distributor of the Compology technology, the in front end load container camera AI system, and they definitely use it to alert property managers. Say, hey, you've got a bicycle in dumpster number 4. This is gonna mean you're gonna get fined. Do you want to take it out of there? So it's not necessarily. And there's also some waste haulers using it for similar things. So RealPage would be an example I might point to.
Can I just add, Craig, that the haulers, the multifamily drivers in City of Los Angeles all use cameras on their trucks, and they're taking pictures of every load as it's dumped, and they are using that for going back to do enforcement and education.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
Last question, please.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question about dual stream recycling. So I'm from Lackawanna County, Pennsylvania. We still have about 10 of 40 of our municipalities who go to a dual stream recycling center. Anyone have any advice on how we have, like, the city of Scranton, who still recycles dual stream, and I really would like them to work on a multifamily ordinance. So any advice on that would be greatly appreciated.
Lackawanna County, Florida is an example of a multifamily program that uses a dual stream system. We're about to roll a grant out with those folks, and so that might be someone you want to talk to.
Okay.
And ironically, Evan talked about dual stream and multifamily last night in a meeting. So.
Yep.
Yeah, a dual stream, same techniques as single stream, but, you know, it would be, for example, in two carts or two dumpsters, right? So the color and the language and the pictures are going to be even more important in dual stream. But there are a lot of communities that are continuing to do dual stream, you know, to maximize the recoverability of the materials. So it can be done and should be done, and it should be similar in the residential, single family residential as multifamily, if you have a chance of getting your education universal across the system.
And I have one more, if that's okay.
Please.
So this might be more for Evan. With So do you, for the city of Orlando, you pick up at those commercial properties? So do you, what do you charge, if you're allowed to talk about that? And do you have a tipping fee yourself at the recycling center or the MRF you take your materials to?
Yeah, we definitely have a tipping fee, and our recycling is, I think now it's $4.50 per cubic yard. So, and then you just multiply that times collection frequency and actual size of the dumpster. Sorry, what was it? Was that it, or was there another?
What do you charge the property owners for properties to pick up recycling?
Just that. That's the flat rate. The $4, just over $4.
So in San Marcos, we have the garbage rate for our residential, but then we do charge for multifamily recycling. It goes to each unit, and that is about $9 per unit. But that also includes more than the on-site recycling. We have a contractor, a local recycling contractor, where people can go 24/7. We've got community cleanups. We've got a household hazardous waste. So we encompass everything within our program within that garbage rate. So we're an enterprise fund as well. So everything that we're doing, we're promoting our program and expanding our program. But yes, we charge about $9 a month for multifamily each unit.
Question.
So in addition to the use of technology for actually enforcement, do you use technology to follow through the numbers? I mean, how these numbers are increasing? You talked about visiting the houses one by one, but why aren't you guys using any technology to trace how these numbers are increasing and which sort of management from the buildings is better than the others? And I mean, I'm trying to understand why isn't technology being used here?
From our standpoint, I can say that it's a space that's evolving, and so there's some folks that are in it and some folks that think they're in it, and so we're not quite there yet on some of it, but we have projects that we are using technology, and some that we've had projects where we've compared the photos that people take against technology to see, because is the technology good? Is the people good? I don't know which way works better. So that's certainly something that we're exploring. I think that it's an evolving space in the multifamily realm.
Yeah, we do use technology. It's usually the technology usually tied. It's truck bound, so it's occurring as the truck is tipping, and we don't necessarily have that for interpretation from a administrative standpoint for what we're trying to do in terms of outside of just operational consistency or efficiency. So we haven't applied it to the realm of research yet a whole lot in terms of AI or imaging, stuff like that. We do utilize different apps when it comes to conducting our field research, though. So taking pictures, and then a lot of that becomes qualitative when we're back in the office, trying to gauge behavior change or participation rate, for example.
The buildings we worked with all had collected email addresses. So our contacts with residents were strictly by email.
We greatly appreciate everyone staying over a little bit. We'll be up here if there's any specific questions. Thanks a lot for your time. Have a great day.